What's going on, church? Good morning. Hey, can we give Brandon and Jesse a round of applause? Yeah. Awesome, awesome job. My name is Nathan. I'll be called Anthony. That's not bad, right? But it's going to happen every once in a while. But hey, it is so good to be with you guys. We're in the middle of this series called Soundtracks, and we made it. This is the last week. Anybody else enjoy this series like I have? All right. It's been cool because it's like I've been talking to myself when I hear this. And so what I don't like is when I say something and make a point at church and then my wife uses it against me throughout the week. So I'll be glad to get that out of the way because I don't have to be used against me. But we've been on this journey of soundtracks and looking at our strongest thoughts. And what we're calling soundtracks are the reoccurring thoughts. So your strongest thoughts that we have that affect the way we see ourselves and how we see the world around us. So our thoughts are directing us. The Bible says as we think in our hearts, we live out in our lives. And so we realize this, that our thoughts lead to our beliefs, and our beliefs lead to our identities, and all that leads to action. And so we've been on this journey of wanting to change our thoughts and replace our broken soundtracks with these soundtracks that will get us to the life that God wants us to be and get us to the person we want to become. And so there's this idea that if you want to change your life, even if you don't follow Jesus yet, but if you have a goal in your life or a direction you want your life to head and you haven't reached it yet, if you want to change your life, start changing the way you think. And today we're going to wrap a bow on it. It's going to be different than all the other weeks, but I think it's going to be good. But first, I need a little participation. How many of you love movies? Any movie lovers out there, right? All right, all right. I love movies. One of my favorite things to do is watch movies, and I think it's rooted back in the day. Anybody remember a place? It's a magical land called Blockbuster. Come on now. Come on. How many of you still have your Blockbuster card? Anybody? Right, I'd be impressed if you do. But Blockbuster, I don't know how to explain it, and if you're under 18, I'm not speaking in tongues. It was a real place at a real time. Blockbuster, and you guys will never get to experience it, but on a Friday night, your mom or dad would take you, and maybe you guys had, I think they had a family video in town. Same concept, but not as fun, right? And so we had Blockbuster. You would go, and you'd walk around. You go through, like, the drama section, and you'd skip over those. You go to the rom-coms. You skip over those. You go straight to the action movies, and you would pray as you're walking down the aisles, please have the movie I want, right? And so you check out the movie, or you bring this little tag up to the front desk or whatever, right, depending what movie store you went to, and they would give you the movie, you get some candy, and you go home, and you'd watch those movies. It was magical. Those were the good days, weren't they? Good old days at Blockbuster. If you're under 18, you'll never get to experience it, but I love movies, and I think it's because I'm a guy who's easily motivated, so I love one-line, you know, phrases or like kind of memorable lines in movies, like Rocky, he's all beaten up. He's like, yo, Adrian, right, you know? Or yelling for Adrian at the end of the movie. Like, you can't forget that. But I love these one-liners, and they often come at this point in the movie where it's like dramatic, or it's the kind of the central theme of the movie, and then the main characters, they'll have these lines, and they'll say it at the perfect time, and it'll be awesome, and it sticks with you, right? And you're easily motivated, and you're like, that was an awesome line. So let me give you a couple examples. One of my favorite movie series of all time is the Fast and the Furious movie series, right? If you don't like it, I don't want to hear it, right? But anyways, there's always this scene. It's Dominic Toretto, Vin Diesel, right? And he's just like, he started as a car guy, and now he's saving the world. And there'll become this scene. They'll have one of the 48 bad guys in the 400 movies we have. And they'll say something, and he'll be like, I'm not worried. I got family, right? Something like that, right? He's like, I don't got friends. I got family, okay? Or how about this movie? It's like scarred into my brain. It's like it gives me nightmares at night from a kid, and it was the movie Titanic. Anybody see that movie? If you're real old school, you remember this was so long when it came on VHS. It came with two VHSs, right? And it was long. And this is the end scene. So if you haven't seen Titanic, I'm about to ruin it for you. One, the ship does sink, and it was a real ship, okay? This is Jack and Rose, the greatest love story that only lasted 4 days, right? It didn't last very long, but this is one of the dramatic scenes. I remember it scarred in my memory. The Titanic sinks, and they survive, and she's floating on this little table, and she's like, Jack, I'll never let you go. I'll never let you go. You guys know what I'm talking about. I'll never let go. What does she do? She lets go, and she's like, Jack, come back. Come back, Jack, right? And we're like, everybody's watching. He would come back if you would have just scooted over just a little bit, right? You remember that. It's like this one-liner, like, we know, all right? And so I got to thinking in my crazy mind. We got soundtracks. Movies have soundtracks. What if our life had a soundtrack? And some of you have soundtracks right now when you walk in the door, right? But what if you had a soundtrack that followed you? Like, as soon as you walked in the door on Sunday, like, your soundtrack played, right? Like, how funny would that be, right? It would just walk through the doors. But what if we had a soundtrack that in our most pressured situations, in the situations in life that were the toughest, the situations in life that bring you to your knees, and the situations in life like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. What if you had a soundtrack? And so what I want to look at today is that soundtrack, or maybe start talking about what if we changed it and made it as individuals, this our soundtrack, or if we made this as a church, this is going to be the soundtrack that plays. But first, to get there, we got to ask this, like, when life squeezes you, so when life is pressure, when things are happening, when we're in these situations that are not, we don't want to be in, or you're stressed, you're anxious, you're depressed, right, you're worried, you're fearful, when it squeezes you, what soundtracks play, right? What comes out of your mind? What comes in your head? What thoughts come? And so that's what we're going to look at today. No matter how you answer that question, we're going to want to ultimately shift that today and replace it with what we're going to look at. And I'm going to be upfront and honest. This soundtrack, one, I think it has the ability to change your life more than any other soundtrack. All the other ones of anxiety and fear and replacing broken soundtracks, all those are important. But this could be the secret today. What we'll look at today, that could be the secret. It could change everything. But it also is the most difficult to apply. It's a soundtrack that I've had to learn to add to my life, and I still struggle with it at times. I had to learn it at a young age, and then as my dad died at a young age, and I really had to learn it as I got older, and I was starting to get mad at God. Then I get married, and I'm like, finally, I'm going to have, besides my stepdad, I'm going to have a good father figure in my life. My stepdad, my father-in-law, my future father-in-law has a stroke, and over the next year, I watched this amazing father, husband, godly man slowly deteriorate and pass away. I had to go to the soundtrack. We were trying to have kids, and we were struggling with infertility, and for years, and 1 year turned into two, and two, three, like, felt like it was never going to happen. I had to go to the soundtrack. And moments when I don't know what to do next, moments when I feel like I don't want to move on, moments when I'm anxious, moments when I'm depressed, I have to go back to this soundtrack, because there have been days, this is the only thing that's got me through. It was the only thing that got me to the next day. Remember, we just want to win today. It's the thing that got me to the next day, and the next day. So that's the soundtrack I want to look at today. I'm not going to give you the name of it yet. But I'm going to read you a couple verses. I'm not going to give you any context, but I'm going to read them, and we're going to talk about them, and then we'll get the context. It says, but even if he does not, everybody say even if. Even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Today we're going to look at this idea of living life with the soundtrack of even if not. Daniel chapter 3 is where we read these words. Daniel is a book in the Old Testament that is a pivotal book. It's one of the most amazing books in all of Scripture, based mainly on a man named Daniel. But it takes place when there's a king named King Nebuchadnezzar. Everybody say Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar. In my messed up mind, I like to call him King Nebi, right? His name's too long. So King Nebi, and he's the king of the Babylonians. And the Babylonians were these ruthless people, this ruthless society. And what they would do is they would come into your nation. They were strong and they were powerful. And what they would want to do is they would basically not just want to enslave you, they'd want to wipe you off the face of the planet. So they're going to destroy your temples. They're going to destroy your gods. They're going to destroy your main buildings. And they're going to do something else. They're going to kill a lot of people. They're going to take people back as slaves. And then they're going to round up the cream of the crop of young men. And these young men, they're going to bring back the Babylon, and they're going to train them. They're going to cut their hair, most likely. They're going to change their diet. They're going to change their names. They're going to indoctrinate them with their new gods. And they're going to say, you're going to become great Babylonian young men, and if you don't, you will die. Well, why the book of Daniel happens is that there's a group of people called the Israelites, God's people. And they're disobeying God. They're far from God, and things are happening. And when you're far from God, bad things happen, right? And so the Babylonians come in, they destroy them, and they bring back the young men to Babylon, and they start training them. And that's where we pick up in chapter 3. Chapter 3, King Nebuchadnezzar, it has these Israelites there and all these other kingdoms, and he builds this massive statue, and it's made of gold. And he says, this is what you're to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipe, and all kinds of music, you must This is what you got to do. You must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar or King Nebi has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. So all these people who are in Babylon, whether they worship King Nebuchadnezzar, whether they worship other gods, it doesn't matter. If you're in his kingdom, when you hear all this music, here's what you're going to do. You're going to bow down, no questions asked, and if you do not bow, you will be killed. Well, that's where three young boys come in named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? Some weird names, some awesome names, I guess. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are Israelites. They've risen through the ranks. They have a good reputation. They're good young boy. They're young men. They're doing great things. They're serving King Nebuchadnezzar because they have to. But even in all this, they don't lose their faith. And so the music plays, and everybody around them starts to bow down. But here's what we read in Daniel chapter 3, verse 12. It says, but there are some Jews who you set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. They're just saying, hey, these are some men that have some influence and are in charge of some of your things, King Nebuchadnezzar. And their names are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you've set up. King Nebuchadnezzar, they're not bowing down. Everybody else is. It looks great. They hear the music and they bow down and they worship you. But these three guys, they're not doing it. So King Nebuchadnezzar has them brought to him, and he says, hey, I don't know who you think you are, but I'm King Nebi, baby, right? I'm King Nebuchadnezzar. I'm in charge here. You may have worshipped another god before you got here, but here's what's going to happen right now, right here. I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to give you a chance one more time. I'm going to play this music. It's going to play Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and you're going to bow down. And if you don't bow down, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to throw you in the furnace. I'm going to kill you, make an example out of you in front of everybody. And we're going to see how great your God is. And then some things go down, and they say the dopest lines of faith, some of the dopest faith lines in all the Bible. They say, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. Like, we don't have to answer to you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it. And he will deliver us from it, from your majesty's hand. Then we get to the good lines. But even if for some reason he doesn't work the way we want, if he doesn't show up the way we expect him to, even if he does not, we just want you to know something, Nebi. We will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up. This moment of great pressure, this dramatic scene would have been a climactic scene in their stories. The music is playing, and this life is pressuring them, standing face to face with the furnace. They're pressured, and this is what comes out of them. They say, even if not. Said Nebuchadnezzar, there's nothing you can do right here, right now, that will cause us to bow and worship you. And then they say something, because this is great lines of faith. They say, God will save us. Maybe today that's all you need to hear. Maybe this is all you will hear. We still worship a God who saves. Maybe in our soundtracks, that's what we need to remember. We still worship a God who works miracles. We still have a God who says there's no fear too big, there's no anxiety too strong, there's no past that's too strong. I can save and I will work in your life. And that's the gospel. The gospel is that there was this great chasm, this great divide between us and God. And God sent his only son to die for us so that we could have a relationship for him. That God, with him, God wanted to save us and God will save. And these boys were, hey, listen, Nebuchadnezzar, God saves. God has saved our ancestors. He saved us now, and we know that he's going to save us, King Nebuchadnezzar. But I want you to know this. We believe he will. We know he can. We know he can. But even if he does not, even if not, Nebuchadnezzar, I want you to know something. We aren't bowing. And I think it's so powerful because before these words were ever, like, they know the conclusion of what's going to happen. They say these words. They could die. These could be their last words. They're like, hey, Nebuchadnezzar, we're not bowing down. That if, man, the if we can just live in that if, it will change everything. Because here's the reality. The if is not connected to a certain outcome. It's not connected. It's not connected to the outcome they want. Because what do we often do? We say, God, you know what? I'll worship you if you do what I want you to do. If things are good. We kind of want the, you guys remember the infomercial, the ShamWow back in the day? Like, they have all these dirty things, and so all of a sudden they bring out this towel-looking thing, the ShamWow, it cleans it all up. That's what we want God to do. God, hey, clean everything up, make it look all nice, make it all clean. God, and if you do, we will worship you forever. And when is it easiest to worship God? Or go to church or read your Bible? When things are going good. But you know what a real test of faith is? What happens when God doesn't work in the way we want? What happens if God doesn't answer that prayer? What happens if the loved one that you're praying for that miracle for does pass away? What happens when you don't get that promotion? What happens when you lose that job? What happens when that marriage you want to save ends in divorce? What happens when the plans that you have for your life don't line up with the plan that God has? That's what the if. It's easy to worship when things are good. They say, Nebuchadnezzar, we're not just worshiping God when things are going the way we want. We want you to know that no matter what you do to us, no matter what the outcome of this whole conversation is, we're still going to worship him. But this, can we just be like really honest? This is hard. God, I don't know if you've ever felt this, but to me, sometimes God doesn't make sense. Anybody ever feel that? Sometimes the way he works, is what I should say, doesn't make sense. Now, I trust him. I trust his plan. I trust that he's good. I trust that he saves. But sometimes it doesn't work. Right? And I look back at my life like, God, why did I have to lose my dad? When there's a lot of guys out there whose dads just didn't want to be part of them. My dad wanted to be part of my life. Why does that have to happen to me? Why'd it have to happen to Whitney's dad? He went to church his whole life. His whole marriage, his life was built on you. Why'd it have to happen there? God, I look around the world, my God, what you're doing sometimes doesn't make sense. Anybody ever with me on that? It's like, it's just, I don't understand. And I trust, but I don't always understand. And I read Paul, the Apostle Paul, there's a passage where he's talking, he's like, I got a thorn in my side. God, I want you to come through. And this guy's given his life to follow God. He's given up everything to follow God. And he's like, hey, God, remove this thorn from me. And he's like, I went to God 3 times. Said, just begging and pleading, God, remove it. God, remove it. Come on, God, you can do it. And God says, no, Paul, not this time. My grace is sufficient for you. And Paul also wrote in a letter, he's like, oh, how great are God's riches and wisdom and knowledge. Like, God is amazing. God is awesome. He's rich in wisdom and knowledge. And God's knowledge is so above us. He's like, how impossible is it for us to understand his decisions and his way? He's saying there are times that we don't understand God. And no matter how long you've gone to church, no matter how strong your faith is, there's going to be moments when something happens in your life. And I'm like, I just don't understand that. If I was in control, God, I might do something different. It's hard to live in that if, isn't it? It's hard to live and worship God even if I don't get what I want. So what happens is God doesn't work the way we want, or it's confusing, and there's often soundtracks that play. There's soundtracks like this, the soundtrack of anger. Anger says, God, I thought you loved me. God, I thought you had the best for me. I thought I mattered to you. And you didn't answer me. God, I don't understand how you're working. I don't understand, God. It's anger, and what happens is you don't understand how God's working, so it leads to the emotion of anger, and that soundtrack plays in our head. It's tough, it's strong, and what happens is this anger grows and grows and grows, and you don't understand, so you start taking your anger out on God, and God can handle it, but often our anger just pushes us further and further and further from God. So there's a soundtrack of anger, and there's a soundtrack of rejection. I can't tell you how many people that I know that I've loved who have prayed for something, wanted something, and I wish that I could tell them why God didn't give them what they wanted, the answer that they wanted, and they reject God and say, you know, God, you're not good. I don't matter to you. So like, I'm not going to worship God like that. So often when we don't understand, often when we don't know the outcome, it's hard to worship God. What we see with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel 3 is that they're willing to understand and live in this tension. Say, we don't know how God's going to work. We don't understand why God's working. We know that we don't understand why we're here in Babylon, why all this has happened, but we're going to worship God no matter what happens. I kind of see this, that we don't have to understand the plan to trust the plan. There's a man I met several years ago named Jay Felipe. Jay Felipe was one of the members at the other church I came from. Jay was in his 60s or 70s, or maybe not that old, but he looked like he was in his 60s or 70s. And he was an awesome man. He was a faithful man. He loved God, loved Jesus, served. He, in other churches, he had been elders and a deacon. He was a great husband, a great father, a great grandfather. And he was just like one of those guys that you see on like a 90s cartoon where he's just a grandpa figure, you know, the cartoon. So loving and so kind. And he was one of the most positive people to talk to every Sunday, because like if I stunk, he was still kind, right? And most people weren't, right? He was so kind. Well, 2017, 2018, Jay was diagnosed with this devastating diagnosis from a doctor. He wasn't feeling good, and he was having some issues, and he got diagnosed with a massive brain tumor or cancer. And they said, listen, Jay, we don't think we can fix this. We don't think we're going to beat this one. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And I remember talking to him after he got that news. And he said these exact words. He's like, I don't understand the plan, but I trust the plan. I don't understand. And then he started doing some radiation, and things got better and got better. But the summer of 2018, May of 2018, I got a phone call. It was Jay's wife, and she said, hey, can you come up to the hospital? They're putting Jay in hospice. We don't know how long it's going to be. They think we have a couple of months. And so I went up to the hospital. I prayed for him, and the family was getting ready to go. I prayed for him, talked with him, go home. 2 hours later, get a phone call. Hey, Jay passed away. And I learned something from Jay, because even on his final moments, he's like, I trust God. I love God. And that we can still trust God and believe in him when bad things happen. Because I remember Jay's family, they were ready for, they were expecting 2 more months. And they got 2 more hours. And that, I've done several funerals since. I'll do several funerals after those. I've done so many funerals, but Jay stands out because he is someone I remember where I can still trust God and I can believe in him even when bad things happen. And so my question for you is this: what would change in your life if you learned or could learn the soundtrack of Even If? Even if. Even if I don't get the promotion. Even if I don't get the diagnosis. Even if I don't get healed. Even if I don't get the answer I want, I will still worship you anyways. And what if we can learn in our lives that no matter what situation we're in, whether we're anxious, we're depressed, we're celebrating, we're things are good. What if we learn this, that it may not make sense, but we'll worship anyways. Because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are face-to-face with the flames, face-to-face with King Nebi, right? And they stand up bold and say, you know what, King Nebuchadnezzar? None of this makes sense to us anyways, but we're worshiping God no matter what happens next. But how do we get there? That's the question. How do we get there? So that's what I want to look at, because faith is hard, and it's not easy to live in that. No one can tell you it's easy. It's not easy to live in that tension. It's not easy to live in that reality. It's not easy to worship when God doesn't make sense or when God doesn't work the way we want. It's not easy. But how do they get there? How do they get to this moment? I want to use 3 words to make it real simple to help us understand how to get there. The first one is the word sit. Everybody say sit. Sit. What I find interesting about the story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is every time they're mentioned in threes. It's always them. They're never alone. It's Shadrach, it's Meshach, and Abednego, right? It's always them. They're never mentioned alone. So the question in life is sometimes what we need to ask is like, who am I sitting with? Who am I sitting with in life? Who am I rolling with? Who are the people that are helping me in my life? Because psychologists say you are the average of your 5 closest relationships. So you got to think like the 5 closest people to me. Do I want to be like them? Do I want to look like them? Well, not look like them, right? You can't help that. Sorry, right? You may want to. Do I want to act like them? Do I want to be the type of person they are? Are they helping me draw closer to God or further away? Who are you sitting with? Who are you sitting with? Who are you rolling with? Because what we never talk about is some of the most underrated aspects of all of our faith and staying faithful to Jesus is realizing, who do I sit with? Who am I living with? Who am I allowing to influence my life? Because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego could always lean on each other. And have you ever noticed this? That commitment lasts better in community. Like, if you want to go on a diet, diet with like 5 or 6 other people who won't quit the diet, because they're going to make you feel bad if you quit the diet, right? If you want to work out with a group of people who are going to challenge you, right? If you want to grow in faith, surround yourself with people who are growing in their faith, because commitment lasts better in community. And faith is hard. Following God is hard because life is hard. It's not always easy. And we got this little flame, and that flame sometimes, man, life just starts to throw stuff on it, tries to put the flame out. And if you're standing alone, you're standing on an island, it's easy to bow like everybody else. But if you got 3 people with you, you got 5 people with you, you got a group of people who are sitting with you, making the same stands as you, helping you live in the even if not, and it's harder to let that flame dwell out. So we got to sit. They sit with the right people. Then we stand. Everybody say stand. Stand. So we always talk about the fiery furnace with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But there's no possible way that this was their first moment of standing. Matter of fact, you go back to Daniel chapter 1, it talks about Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're brought into the Babylon. And they're told, hey, you're going to eat this food. And these Israelite boys are like, listen, we can't eat this food. It goes against everything we believe. We can't eat this food. So they make this little deal with the king's official. They say, listen, we're going to eat this food, this healthy food, fruits and vegetables, the Daniel diet. We're going to do this. And for 10 days, just see how it ends up. After those 10 days, come back and we'll see where we're at. So they eat this food. And 10 days later, the king's official comes back. And they look good. Like, ooh, you look good. I can see your abs. You look toned, right? And so they look so good that the king's officials say, you know what? Everybody's going to eat the diet of Daniel, Shadrach, and Meshach, and Abednego. You see, before they had to stand in this moment, they took stands that they were going to worship God no matter what happened elsewhere. Someone once said that if you want to stand publicly, you first got to stand privately. They love God. They worship God. They build their life on standing on the foundation of who God was and what God has done in their lives. And what we need now in culture and society in our lives is we need people who are willing to stand. You don't have to be hateful. You don't have to be mean. You don't have to be ugly. But you got to take stand and say, well, we're the light of the world. We have the hope of Jesus. We believe that we have the transformational news of Jesus, and we need to bring that, and we need to take stands. See, because when that music played, everybody bowed, including all the other Israelites that were brought to Babylon. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they stood. And when that music played, they had 3 options. They could give up, they could give in, they could stand up. They went to King Nebuchadnezzar and said, hey, we're not giving up. We don't care if you're king. We're not giving in. We're not bowing. Matter of fact, here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep standing. So they sat, who you sit with, who you stand with, and it continues. Verse 19, it says, then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And his attitude toward them changed. He's angry. He's furious. And he ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual. It says this, verse 22. It says, then the king's command was surgent in the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. So Shadrach said, the king says, you know what, boys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you're not going to bow? We're going to tie you up. So they tie him up, and they turn the furnace 7 times hotter than it's ever been, so hot that as people the soldiers were turning it on, they die. So they tie him up, and they bring him to this furnace. And as they're walking, here's what I believe they do. And this is the final point. They remember. They're walking. I believe they're walking with a little bit of swagger and confidence. Like, you know, they're not quite running to it, but they're not scared, right? They're walking with confidence. They just told the king off, right? So, hey, what else we got to lose? They're walking with that godly confidence. Hey, God will save us. God will deliver us. Like, they're still acting. Hey, God's going to work. God's going to move. But even if not, right? Even if not, we're going to go right in those flames. Nothing's going to change. We're not bowing down. We're standing. They're confident. They're confident that God's going to work. But I also think they remember what God has done, but I also think they remember something else. Remember what happened when they were brought into Babylon? They changed their clothes, changed their food, they changed their names. we know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But in Daniel 1, we're told this. To Hananiah, their names were changed to Shadrach. Mishael was Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. That's their names. So I think as they're walking up to that furnace tied up, they say, "Hey, Nebuchadnezzar, you can take our names. You can try to steal our identity. You can change our diet. You can change our clothes. But we remember whose we are." Sometimes in life, that's what's going to get you through. You got to remember whose you are. You got to remember the God who saves is the God who created you. The God who created you is the God who loves you. You got to remember whose you are. And here's what's so cool. You know what their names meant? Hananiah, Shadrach meant Yahweh is gracious. And as he's walking up, I imagine him thinking, yeah, God, Yahweh has been so gracious. God has been so good to me that even if this doesn't go the way I want, my life has been good. God, Yahweh, you've been so gracious to me. Michelle, who is like Yahweh, I imagine him with his little personality. I don't know what it was, but he's like, "Hey, God, I hope I've lived a life that when people look at me, they see a little bit of who you are. That I've been faithful, I've been honest, I've had the right soundtracks." And I love Abednego's name. What that means? It means Yahweh has helped. Because I imagine he's remembering that. Yahweh, you've helped us in the past. Yahweh, you've been there in the past. You've been good to me in the past. Now answer one more time. When these moments hit and life is tough, sometimes it's going back to remembering who's you are. And I look at my life, and I've been blessed with a great life, and I've been blessed with God working in my life, and you guys have been blessed with a great life. But it's been hard at times. And I live in this tension of every day because I feel a little guilty about it, and I don't know how to communicate it always. But the worst thing that happened in my childhood by far was losing my best friend, my dad, without a doubt. And losing him to an addiction, losing him in a car wreck. It was totally it could never happen. He was drinking and driving. But I look back in my life and I see at the same time that Yahweh's been gracious to me. He's helped me. And this worst moment of my life, he made it a pivotal moment. It's also at the same time maybe been the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And it's hard to live in that tension because God turned this nasty, dark, awful thing and he's led me to where I am today. And I've had to go back so many times and say, remember whose I am. Maybe that's all you need to do sometimes. Remember whose you are. And I may have anxiety. I may be depressed. I may be anxious. Life may be awful. But I'm Yahweh's. The story goes on. It says, "Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, 'Hey, weren't there three men tied up in that fire? Didn't we throw three in there?' Like, 'Yeah, yeah, we threw three in there, your majesty.' He said, 'Look, I see four.'" Everybody knows that four is more than three, right? He's like, "What's going on?" "Unbound." He looked at four men walking around the fire, unbound and unharmed. And the fourth looks like a son of God's. And many scholars believe that this Son of God's term is Jesus in the Old Testament. And it's just a reminder that when the flames turn up, no matter where life is, where you're at in life, God is beside us. And these three men walk out, and they're saved by God, and they walk out, and King Nebuchadnezzar's like, "What is going on?" Then he changes his mind. He says, "Hey, your God, he must be the true God." And then everybody, he starts making decrees where people are going to worship the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The God of Abraham, the God of Jacob, the God who saves. That's who we're going to worship. And all of a sudden, in this dark, godless society, the light of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shines, and they start worshiping God. So my question is, for us as a church, no matter where you are today or what's going on in your life, what if we learned to live in that little tension of even if not? God, we're going to worship you, even if not. Even if you don't give us the outcome we want. God, we're going to worship you even if things don't get better. God, hey, even as the world gets darker, God, you are the king on the throne still. God, we're going to live in the even if not.